As globalism transitions from global to local, we become vocal local, blocking the globalist agenda right where we are, in our towns, cities, counties, and states. And now, here is that nemesis of globalism, your host, William Roberts.
Well, the sun is rising over Missouri, folks, and it's time once again for a Show Me Showdown. We got breakfast on the table all across America, coffee brewing on the stove, and there's a revolution in the air. Be a part of it, won't you? And welcome to our Wednesday, October the 7th, 2009, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local, coming to you Monday through Friday live here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network, oraclebroadcasting.com. Yes, my name is William Roberts. I've got good news of sorts. Lots of facts today, workable solutions. Well, you'll have to find them for yourself in all of this. But we're going to be joined once again by independent researcher Daryl Eberhardt to continue our study of the discussion of the missing gaps in the bloody history of Papal Rome. Lots of very fascinating material on the table for today. If you can't remember the last time you experienced the pursuit of happiness in your life, then you're definitely in the right place at the right time to become vocal local. This is the home of philosophical radicalism, where freedom is popular and remains the best hope for America. Interactive Talk Radio is the name of the game, and be a part of today's broadcast. You can pick up the phone and call throughout the program. For those with unlimited long-distance access or in the Austin, Texas area, you may call in at 512-904-8014 and join us live on air, or take Oracle with you on your mobile phone. And from around America and around the world, you can call in toll-free at 866-841-1065, and of course your calls are welcome. You may also send your ideas for guest show topics and news to me via email at bvlhost@centurytel.net. Again, bvlhost, like become vocal local, host@centurytel.net. And for those without internet access listening by any of our affiliate stations and micro broadcasters, you too can be a part of it. Simply send your letters to me at William Roberts, Post Office Box 96, out of Exeter, Missouri, 65647. That's Box 96, always and forever, Exeter, Missouri, 65647. A big shout out again to Liberty Radio out of Owensville, Missouri, Micro 1650 AM, Buffalo, New York, and 94.3 Elgin, Texas. Thank you, gentlemen, for broadcasting Become Vocal Local to your local listening audiences. Our call-in number remains throughout the broadcast at 866-841-1065, and your calls are always welcome. Gold sets a new record high at $1,049.50, pulling the precious metals, crude oil, and stocks higher. The U.S. dollar index inches up, forcing exchange rates lower. We'll talk about that briefly. And again, our returning guest, Daryl Eberhardt, is going to help us to understand a little bit more about Tsar Alexander and some of the machinations behind the scene at that time period. Of course, we'll take your calls and much more. Let's go to those market reports quickly for Wednesday, October the 7th, 2009. Active trading out of New York City. As of 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time, we find gold off its high yesterday at $1,040.20. It's off $1.60 so far in early morning trading. Silver losing 4 cents at $17.30. Nevertheless, $17.30 is not a bad place for silver either. Platinum up $6 at $13.19. Palladium up $6 as well at $312 an ounce. The lows and the highs in the gold spot market this morning so far, $1,037.50 for a low, $1,049.50 for a high. At $1,040.20 an ounce, your gold is up $185.50 year to year for a 21.69% return on your investment. The boys in London had to capitulate. They set the gold fix this morning at $1,047. You can see we're trading $7 below that now. The Dow yesterday closed up 132 at 9,731. The NASDAQ up 35, 2104. The S&P was up 14, trading 1,055. The crude oil this morning up 21 cents, 71.09 for crude oil, a barrel of light sweet crude. That U.S. dollar index up 16 basis points at 76.46. Pick it all up right there on the other side of this break with our guest, Daryl Eberhardt. Stay tuned.
Heard about the most advanced affordable upgrade for your vehicle? Sonic spark plugs bring you increased fuel mileage and performance. It's like a new brain for your engine from enginebrain.com. Just like a pound of sawdust burns faster than a pound of wood chips, finer fuel mist burns faster. Using a patented process, Sonic spark plugs smash gasoline mist with ultrasound. Thousands of drivers have upgraded to Sonic spark plugs for more power and mileage. Just replace your old plugs with Sonic plugs. Now get a free Sonic spark plug for your chainsaw, generator, snowblower, or lawnmower and pay only shipping and handling. Once you experience ultrasonic power, you'll want them in your car, truck, motorcycle, or RV. Visit enginebrain.com to learn why Sonic spark plugs outperform all other spark plugs. They're a small company, but their advanced plugs are 100% OEM compatible with your vehicle's warranty. Visit enginebrain.com to learn about combustion theory, hydrogen power, and fuel efficiency. Learn what the oil companies would rather you not know, like a new brain for your engine. Enginebrain.com. Enginebrain.com.
Look, it's time someone gave you the facts about your computer. If you're a Windows user, you know all too well what the problems are. Viruses, crashes, sluggish behavior. Finally, you have to fix it or take it to the shop. We see it every day. Now, Microsoft is preparing for the release of their new Windows 7. They want you to pay hundreds of dollars to upgrade. Well, you don't have to pay for the privilege of using your computer anymore. We've been installing Linux at home and for businesses in Austin for 4 years. Our customers love it. Why Linux? It never costs you a dime. All the software you need is free, and you never have to worry about Windows viruses again. Linux is all but immune. Many of your Windows programs will run on Linux as well. Have an older computer? Linux runs great on it, when Windows won't. So instead of paying for a system that's going to cause you problems, stop fighting your computer and start using it. Check out the facts at www.fixedbylinux.com. That's L-I-N-U-X, fixedbylinux.com. Or call us at 512-739-9707. There's a better way. Linux.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At HempUSA.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At HempUSA.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from HempUSA.org.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
And welcome back to our Wednesday, October the 7th, 2009, two-hour broadcast to Become Vocal Local. We come to you Monday through Friday here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network, oraclebroadcasting.com. Joined again, as we are, by Daryl Everhart to continue our study of the discussion of the missing gaps in what we like to think of as the bloody history of Papal Rome. But before we go back to Daryl and pick that up, let's go ahead and close out this market report for this morning. I will mention that, yes, I got your emails. Thank you very much. It's always wonderful to get emails after the broadcast. There was nothing that I could do about it. Yesterday's broadcast was not archived. It's a very rare occurrence here on Oracle Broadcasting Network that there's any problem with the archives of this broadcast. Typically, they go out absolutely fantastically. In 128K streaming audio, you can get it in any variety that you want. But yes, indeed, in fact, yesterday we had a glitch. And no, I don't have any transcripts of my broadcast. So I just encourage you to listen to the broadcast, record them yourselves if you can, take advantage of the archives on Oracle Broadcasting, and make the best of it. But there was no plot, there was no scheme, there's nothing wrong. It was just a minor glitch in the system. Anyway, putting that behind us, let's go back to the market report for October the 7th, 2009. We found gold trading off $1.60 off of its yesterday's very high close. It was trading this morning at $1,040.20 at 9 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Silver was off 4 cents at $17.30. The lows and the highs in the gold spot market this morning, folks, we set a new high. It was $1,037.50 for the low, which is huge, is high, and $1,049.50, just two quarters shy of that very important $1,050 mark. Anyway, we're up $185.50 year to year on your gold investments at $1,040.20 for a 21.69% if you'd purchased on this day just 1 year ago. In the foreign exchange rates, we see that all of them down, moving down against a slight uptick in the U.S. dollar index. The Canadian dollar is running at 94 cents, the Mexican peso at 7, the euro a $1.47 U.S., the British pound a $1.59 U.S., and you can buy Swiss francs this morning for 97 cents each. With that out of the way, we're going to stop on the financial news. Yes, I could talk about it for an hour, but we've got our guest returning, Daryl Eberhardt. Good morning, Daryl, and thanks for coming back and joining us once again here on Become Vocal Local.
Oh, good to be back on with you again, William. It's always a pleasure.
Well, it's my pleasure as well, because you're forcing me really in a way by coming on like this on a weekly basis to go back and recover some ground that I haven't touched for years. And over the years, I've added a lot of new material into my own research library and have gotten more proficient on the computer. Certainly, there's a lot to understand about what's happening from a geopolitical standpoint with Papal Rome and all of the various countries around the world as we've moved further and closer, if you will, to the 21st century. Right now, we're still in the 19th century moving ahead. But we left off coming into the place where Alexander II, the Tsar of Russia, started to figure into the American Civil War, and maybe we could just pick it up right where we left off last Wednesday.
Right, and that's kind of a really, relatively unknown part of our history of, concerning the American Civil War. At least I used to have several scrapbooks as a kid growing up that's very interested in the American Civil War, is the fact that a Russian czar intervened to help save America's bacon because the British and the French had already made military preparations to come in on the side of the Confederacy. They wanted to divide the Union, and of course Papal Rome was the real people behind the scenes pushing so hard for this, because again, as we talked earlier, all of these divine writers, the people that believed in the divine right of kings and popes in Europe, were scared to death of this experiment in democracy and constitutional republic, popular representative government, and all of the freedoms that had basically been unknown to the poor European peoples for many centuries. They had all been ruled by pretty much despotic monarchs who got their right to rule from the Pope himself. So yeah, it's such an important fact, and it blows my mind that it wouldn't be in any of our American encyclopedias, and it wouldn't be in our American history textbooks, because obviously the South would have won had Britain and France come in militarily on their side.
Well, one of the things that I noticed going over the past several days, really from the time we caught off air last week until now, I have really not stopped studying this, folks, and I really would encourage the listeners to take a little bit of time, listen carefully. You know, there's Daryl, you and I are both very well aware within the patriot community, if you will, of the exceedingly great emphasis that's placed on the Jewish connection and the Ashkenazim and all of that. We can understand that it's out there, that it's existing, that there is some ground for claims along that line. But there's also a much greater, in my opinion, historical underpinning that might have us look in other directions for those connections. And so when we think about Russia, my ignorance on Russia is just humbling, how little I really know about it. But what I discovered was that even though there are references in the various histories that I have five history textbooks from universities and colleges around America that I've gathered up in my flea marketing. But the history texts, they do point to the Tsar and his support for the North at this time. But what they don't really discuss is the bigger picture, the broader picture of what was happening in Russia. So we kind of have a biased look at something that is far greater than that. You know, going back and looking at the very beginning with Rurik, for instance, of Russia, the founder, the reputed founder of the Russian Empire, to find out that he was basically either Swedish or Scandinavian for certain, that we do know, but to, you know, find him there and then to find them basically a Christian nation in their development coming from Rurik back about 870, he died in 879 forward, there is a tremendous quantity of research. And folks, you know, we're talking 1,200 years of the existence and the development of a country while we are ourselves only but a couple of hundred years old. So there's a whole lot of shaking going on in the background, and a lot of that is the development of what was basically one of the most wealthy families, the Romanov family, eventually came into to power. The Romanovs held power for a very, very long time in Russia. And so these are big players in the background, and to just get passing notice in the history text raises my eyebrows for sure. We've got about 10 or 15 seconds here, so I'm going to just go ahead and continue us into the break, and I'll let you pick up there on the other side. And we're going into that break right now. So we'll be back in just 3 minutes, folks. Stay with us. Visiting again today with Daryl Eberhardt.
Millions of Americans are beginning to realize the enormity of the economic and political problems facing the U.S. and the world. And for the first time in their lives, they are feeling the need for preparedness. Ready Reserve Foods has been in continuous operation, manufacturing the finest in dehydrated foods for almost 40 years. Ready Reserve is the manufacturer. Unlike other companies that just broker canned foods, Ready Reserve controls the quality from start to finish with double enameled cans and nitrogen packaging. When purchasing from Ready Reserve Foods, you are buying factory direct at wholesale prices. Other companies are quoting delivery times of 1 to 2 months, while Ready Reserve ships within 5 business days. Many companies do not even offer a catalog. We will be more than happy to send a catalog to you free of charge. Dial 1-800-453-2202, 1-800-453-2202, or visit our website at readyreservefoods.com. Factory direct, wholesale pricing from Ready Reserve Foods. Call us at 1-800-453-2202.
Howdy, my name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, "Information is the currency of democracy." Trine Day brings to you what some don't want you to read today. Dr. Mary's Monkey is a book of profound importance. It helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book exposing the secret plans of the world's elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Amazon.com has become a leader in online retail and is a place where people can find and discover virtually anything they want to buy. Amazon offers thousands of products including
books, movies, and music,
full range of electronics,
computer and office,
sports and outdoors,
dry storable and organic foods,
health and wellness,
survival and tactical gear,
home and garden, and much more.
Amazon not only offers over 10,000 online products, but also operates retail websites and offers programs that enable you to sell your products online.
By making your purchases through Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com, a portion of each purchase goes to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Find great prices on hard-to-find items and help support Oracle Broadcasting at the same time. That website again is Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com.
Oh,
And we have returned once again. And you know what? As I was going through and starting out this study, folks, it was very, very difficult to pick up the thread, really, with Russia. And you may have found it the same with you, Daryl. In order to really get on the beam and get started, I needed to start my study on Moscow in the encyclopedias and then build from there. The history of Moscow gets us into the right position to understand then what became Russia. But by about the 1800s, when Alexander was born, 1818, we've made an enormous leap over very valuable research, lots of research in there. And it was through the discovery of Moscow and running up through the Romanov family that you really start to get a feeling for the dynamic that was happening in Europe. Why don't we pick up from your part 10. Well, let me say this for the listeners that may have just joined us and aren't familiar with these Wednesday episodes as we study along with Daryl and his research. Folks, you can go to his website. It's www.toughissues.org. Toughissues.org. I first came to into Daryl's acquaintance back in about 2005, and he sent me many, many, many pamphlets and handouts that he's written up, gathered from many sources that I find very valuable because of the way that he does his research. It's always straight quotations. When he's doing his editorial comment tour, always lets you know that when you're reading, so there's no confusion. But you'll find on his website, toughissues.org, material that can help to provide some background for what we're talking about. But Daryl, pick it up with Alexander II. Very interesting story.
Right, and you know, there several historians really draw very stark parallels between the U.S. empire that grew out of 13 colonies and went west. Well, the Russian Empire went east. It spread east, and it started out pretty much, as you mentioned, around Moscow, and then became a European power and spread and all the way to the Far East, to Japan. You know, the edge of the ocean there with Japan on the other side.
Yes, the peninsula there.
So, yeah, there's some pretty stark parallels. But anyway, the reason we're talking about Tsar Alexander II is he was involved, he and his family were involved initially as part of the Holy Alliance that wanted to get rid of the United States, our constitutional republic, because, again, they all of these despotic European monarchs and the Pope himself feared that all those ideas like religious liberty and freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, and popular representative government were going to spread like a virus from the United States over to Europe and infect their peoples. And who knows, then someone might rise up and revolt and throw off the kings. And we have to remember the Pope himself had many lands and was a sovereign, a European sovereign himself. They were called the Papal States for many, many years. And he indeed did rule Europe through these despotic monarchs. And we're going to find with almost all these people that we're talking about, these heads of state that were assassinated by agents of Papal Rome, the main reasons that they usually get assassinated is number one, they mess with the Jesuits, or they'll try to suppress the Jesuits or actually expel the Jesuits from their land, or they'll break some of the concordats that were signed between their despotic monarchs and the papacy. So jumping in on Tsar Alexander II of Russia, he gets murdered on March 13, 1881, and I say by agents of Papal Rome, more specifically of the Jesuit order. And he's traveling along a road, and they toss a homemade bomb at his carriage, and it kills several of the Cossack guard that he has. And he jumps out to go, actually, I guess, render aid to those guards, and a second bomb gets tossed, and that's the one that blows him to pieces.
Well,
and
that's one of the places where a lot of the discussion about anarchs and anarchism and anarchy gets confused and comes into play, because we think of these various anarchists, you know, and there's been a bunch of them people who have done assassinations of heads of state and principal political figures, geopolitical figures. But oftentimes, if you just pull the corner of the sheet up and look inside, you'll find it's not just some hairball with an IED, an improvised explosive device. Oftentimes, these are agents of the papacy.
Yeah, exactly. It rarely is it ever just the lone, not assassin like Lee Harvey Oswald. There's almost always a conspiracy. There's almost always people working behind the scene, and they rarely have any trouble either buying somebody or using one of their own fanatical monks or friars. The Jesuits often rarely use a Jesuit to kill somebody. The Jesuits will use a Dominican or a Franciscan, but their favorite is to use, as you said, like an anarchist or something, somebody that's in a group that's disgruntled for some reason against the local monarch, and they'll just they'll either promise him money or they'll provide him with other means, opportunities, and intelligence, and also arms if needed. So. Yeah, they don't have any trouble usually finding somebody to do their dirty work for them.
You look at the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius, and we can understand that once you can get control of somebody's mind through their belief systems, get inside and start messing with faith and things like that, you know, you can get people to strap bombs on their body, do just about anything. You know, we've got all of these Manchurian candidates and mind control slaves, if you will, people that now with the use of drugs, of course, there's nothing new about the pharmacopoeia. It goes all the way back and begins even before the Borgia popes. But these people that have throughout history come up as these lone assassins, oftentimes, like I said, there's something going on in the background, and if we look at it really carefully, it doesn't make a lot of difference who it is. Somebody with an axe to grind, you know, you could just look on the internet and find some hate-filled blogger, you know. If you can get in there and work with them and identify them, you can use them as a tool for evil.
Right, and that's why the Jesuits for over four centuries have striven to wherever they're at, to be the number one folks in education. They always tried to set up the universities and the institutes of higher learning, and to make sure that they were the ones training from a very early age all of the nobility, all of the, you know, the generals, the colonels, the princes and princesses, and had access, and also by means of the confessional, auricular confession to an authorized priest, so that they would have their hand on the pulse of any nation, any state, any province, any region. But anyway, that I mentioned the first bomb killed a couple of his Cossacks, and whenever he jumped out to check on it, they nailed him with the second. And that the second bomb, and there had been several other. I've read at least two to three other failed assassination attempts on his life. So anyway, Alexander II was born in 1818. He was the son of Tsar Nicholas I. The grandson of Tsar Alexander I. He was Tsar of Russia from 1855 to 1881. And interestingly, his proclamation in 1861 resulted in the emancipation of 23 million serfs. So a little parallel with Abraham Lincoln there. And Tsar Alexander II of Russia was, of course, hated by the Jesuits for a number of reasons, and I've got about five here at least. His grandfather, Tsar Alexander I, had expelled the Jesuits from Russia in 1820. That almost guarantees you're going to get killed, and any of your people that follow you on the throne are also going to be targeted unless they bend the knee to Papal Rome. Number two, Tsar Alexander II himself had revoked Papal Rome's. We'll jump on that one when we get back to the second reason.
Very good. Pick it up right on the other side of this break. Folks, your calls are welcome. Today, if you'd like to call in, the number is 866-841-1065. Be back in 3 minutes.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. No one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds of thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
The world appears to be on the brink of collapse. Experts say a pinch of heirloom vegetable seed could soon be the most valuable resource on Earth because it will provide healthy food now and every year after. SurvivalistSeeds.com now has the heirloom garden seed time capsule, allowing you to store your seeds for the future anywhere, even underground, for 100 years. The heirloom garden seed time capsule can withstand 3 tons of weight, is 100% rodent-proof, waterproof, and comes with a whopping 6,000 healthy vegetable seeds from 20 varieties that will grow anywhere in the USA. Unless you trust the government, the heirloom garden seed time capsule and heirloom seeds from SurvivalistSeeds.com is your long-term food solution. Our competition charges 10 cents to $1.25 per seed for these same heirloom varieties. But you can now have a head of lettuce, a bundle of carrots, a basket of tomatoes, a giant watermelon, and 16 other varieties for about a penny a seed each. Be prepared. Buy your heirloom seeds today from SurvivalistSeeds.com and have food insurance for your family forever. Visit SurvivalistSeeds.com. SurvivalistSeeds.com is owned by Big John Lipscomb, host of the Don't Tread on Me radio show.
Have you heard about the most advanced affordable upgrade for your vehicle? Sonic spark plugs bring you increased fuel mileage and performance. It's like a new brain for your engine from enginebrain.com. Just like a pound of sawdust burns faster than a pound of wood chips, finer fuel mist burns faster. Using a patented process, Sonic spark plugs smash gasoline mist with ultrasound. Thousands of drivers have upgraded to Sonic spark plugs for more power and mileage. Just replace your old plugs with Sonic plugs. Now get a free Sonic spark plug for your chainsaw, generator, snowblower, or lawnmower and pay only shipping and handling. Once you experience ultrasonic power, you'll want them in your car, truck, motorcycle, or RV. Visit enginebrain.com to learn why Sonic spark plugs outperform all other spark plugs. They're a small company, but their advanced plugs are 100% OEM compatible with your vehicle's warranty. Visit enginebrain.com to learn about combustion theory, hydrogen power, and fuel efficiency. Learn what the oil companies would rather you not know, like a new brain for your engine. EngineBrain.com. EngineBrain.com.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
And visiting again today with Daryl Eberhardt, and your calls, of course, are welcome at 866-841-1065. And to this Alexander II, Tsar of Russia, his involvement and at the time period of the war of northern aggression or the war of secession, as some might say. We call it the Civil War in textbooks. But certainly the idea of emancipating 23 million serfs figures very largely in this particular discussion, insofar as that would eventually be what the historians would say that was the primary motivator for the war, the Civil War, was the freeing of the slaves. But this is the kind of stuff that just puts the fear of God in the hearts of these dominionists, because even with the creation of the Jesuit order as the part of the counter, as the counter-reformation to the Reformation itself, this is challenging long-held systems, geopolitical systems, at a time, really, as well, Daryl, that the first oil discoveries were being made here in 1859.
We all need to understand that to control a nation, it's much easier to do it if you have a very small power elite at the top, whether it's a despotic king or a dictator, fascist dictator, than it is with a powerful middle class. And that's why we saw an intellectuals, and that's why we saw through a lot of the communist revolutions in the past, China and the Soviet Union, that the intellectuals and the middle class, even farmers, are considered a threat because they're too independent. And again, they want to control, and if they can control one monarch, it's a much easier deal than if you have a parliamentary a system that really works in a country and a powerful middle class, because then you have to worry about some of the nobles and that may be siding with the middle class. So again, it's easier to control if you're only dealing with a couple folks. And we see that's why the Jesuits do a number of these assassinations, is that they get a guy in there that they can't control, that they can't bribe, that they can't threaten, and they'll have to murder him. And if there's a lot of other people, say generals, high-level generals, and nobility that are against the papacy, then they've got a real problem. So again, they like to narrow it down and deal with as few people, a few powerful people as at the top as they can. But we'll get back here. I've got at least five reasons here why they did kill Tsar Alexander II. We started out, his grandfather, Tsar Alexander I, had indeed expelled the Jesuits from Russia in 1820. So there's a line here about three of these rulers in Russia who are not, they're kind of treating the papacy pretty poorly, which is going to draw the Jesuits' wrath because the Jesuits control the papacy. Second reason that Tsar Alexander II was assassinated, he had revoked Papal Rome's concordat with Russia because the Jesuits had fomented the Polish Rebellion. We have to remember that Poland was a power for a while, but for a long time there, Germany and Russia, and we even saw it in World War II, where they're both vying for control of Poland. The third reason got whacked was he had twice broken diplomatic relations with the papacy in 1866 and 1877. Fourth reason was he wanted to establish, and he'd already signed some documents for this, he wanted to establish a constitutional monarchy. He had signed some paperwork for a constitution in Russia to replace the absolute monarchy in Russia. So basically he was taking power away from his own family. And again, this would have made it much harder for Papal Rome to influence the Russian monarchy. And number five reason, and this is one we had talked about earlier and last week also, was Tsar Alexander II had supported Lincoln and the Union during the American Civil War of 1861 to 1865, whereas the Roman pontiff, Pope Pius IX, had supported the Confederacy openly with a warm letter he had sent him that caused many desertions in the ranks of the Union Army of Roman Catholics. But Tsar Alexander II supported the United States at that time, I should say the Union, by sending part of his Russian naval fleet to U.S. waters. He sent some to the west coast, some to the east coast, and he placed them under the direct command of President Lincoln. And he did that because he and others, I believe some folks around Lincoln had learned that France and England were getting ready to intervene militarily on the side of the Confederacy. So again, I would think even to this day that relatively few Americans are aware of the fact that Tsar Alexander II really did, along with Lincoln, help to preserve the American Union at the time of the American Civil War.
Well, there was a payback involved in that, which brought on some rather interesting study as well. I grew up in Fairbanks, Alaska. I lived there while it was still yet a territory. It didn't get statehood. I remember the day that it became a state of the Union. But the idea of Seward's Folly, you know, we look at that ice box up there, and it is a very cold place, but it's a wonderful, beautiful place to live. But when we think about this Roman navy coming into play and all of this, and certainly the Russians had no navy for a long, long time. They had no port to the sea. They had no conduit to the sea. They had to build a navy just in order to try and gain some ground and get sea access. But loaning their navy to this would ordinarily require a payback. And so it wasn't going to be something where you could just open the checkbook of the United States and write a check and say thanks to the Tsar. So what Seward designed in all of this was a way of buying Alaska from the Russians as a way of transferring capital directly to the Tsar as a thank you for that. And so we got all of that fabulous natural resources and what would become the 49th state as a payback for this. So there's a lot in this, Daryl. It's fascinating history.
Yeah, and Alaska, of course, has a little bit of oil and natural gas.
Just a little bit.
So, yeah, it's interesting that that we see that Russia and the United States, or yeah, the Union, I should say, the North, would join up together to prevent this country being split into two. Well, let's jump to another guy that got murdered. And
let me throw one other thing in, because I think it's important. It very, very bears on this a lot. Throughout the history of the development of Russia, they were continuously, it seems, at war with Turkey. And part of this, we need to understand also another one of these things that these various hates that lay in the background. But the idea that Roman Catholic Church and the Eastern Orthodox Church are not bedfellows. Their church designs are different. Their proceeding is different. Their dogma and doctrine are different. And so there would be a natural antagonism involved in this as well. It would be well for the papacy, the Vatican, to crush, if you will, this huge Eastern Orthodox country.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, the Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church were mortal enemies for many, many centuries after the Great Schism, and where the Eastern Church broke away from the Western Church, the Roman Catholic, because of they just didn't want to be under the control of the Pope.
Exactly. And then there's the Greek Orthodox. And so, again, folks, you know, we have to widen the hem of our garment when we do this kind of research and realize that there's many players on the field, and we're talking about a centuries-old conflict of which we are just, you know, like I said, just a couple of hundred years into it. So, okay, let's go on to the next step.
Right. And the next person that we find getting murdered, and of course, on all of these, we should be good little detectives and always look for motive. And that's the thing that, especially in murders, that detectives look for, who has the motive to do it, but also the means, and that also includes having the necessary money to hire the people to do the job, to help people escape after the thing, and then to do the cover-up, and then maybe to frame somebody else, which we saw in the JFK assassination, and, of course, the opportunity. And the Jesuits certainly have it in all of these cases that we're naming. So 1882, we come upon Leon Michael Gambetta. He's a French leader. Well, he goes out and he abolishes the Jesuit order in France in 1880, and of course he gets shot to death 2 years after that. And it's just another case of Jesuit payback. And we find almost again, in almost every one of these instances, they either messed with a concordant with the papacy, or they suppressed the Jesuit order, actually expelled them from their country. And that happened in many of the European countries. I believe Portugal, France, Spain, all of these predominantly Roman Catholic countries had thrown the Jesuits out at least three times and maybe more. So it's not just an Orthodox country or that. As a matter of fact, the only two countries that really took the Jesuits in initially were Russia and England, whenever they were suppressed by the Catholic Church itself.
Okay, well, we'll pick it up right there on the other side of this break, folks. Fascinating discussion. Your calls are welcome. 866-841-1065. Visiting today with Daryl Everhart. We'll be back in a few moments after this commercial intermission.
Look, it's time someone gave you the facts about your computer. If you're a Windows user, you know all too well what the problems are. Viruses, crashes, sluggish behavior. Finally, you have to fix it or take it to the shop. We see it every day. Now, Microsoft is preparing for the release of their new Windows 7. They want you to pay hundreds of dollars to upgrade. Well, you don't have to pay for the privilege of using your computer anymore. We've been installing Linux at home and for businesses in Austin for 4 years. Our customers love it. Why Linux? It never costs you a dime. All the software you need is free, and you never have to worry about Windows viruses again. Linux is all but immune, and many of your Windows programs will run on Linux as well. Have an older computer? Linux runs great on it, when Windows won't. So instead of paying for a system that's going to cause you problems, stop fighting your computer and start using it. Check out the facts at www.fixedbylinux.com. That's L-I-N-U-X, fixedbylinux.com. Or call us at 512-739-9707. There's a better way. Linux.
Of the 3 million-plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At HempUSA.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At HempUSA.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from HempUSA.org.
Millions of Americans are beginning to realize the enormity of the economic and political problems facing the U.S. and the world. And for the first time in their lives, they are feeling the need for preparedness. Ready Reserve Foods has been in continuous operation, manufacturing the finest in dehydrated foods for almost 40 years. Ready Reserve is the manufacturer. Unlike other companies that just broker canned foods, Ready Reserve controls the quality from start to finish with double enameled cans and nitrogen packaging. When purchasing from Ready Reserve Foods, you are buying factory direct at wholesale prices. Other companies are quoting delivery times of 1 to 2 months, while Ready Reserve ships within 5 business days. Many companies do not even offer a catalog. We will be more than happy to send a catalog to you free of charge. Dial 1-800-453-2202, 1-800-453-2202, or visit our website at readyreservefoods.com. Factory direct, wholesale pricing from Ready Reserve Foods. Call us at 1-800-453-2202.
And we've returned once again. You know, folks, at this particular time in history, there's a lot going on here. Of course, we haven't come to the Russian Revolution yet. We're not talking about the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks yet. But some of the same players, Daryl, have been in the background here all of this time. John D. Rockefeller was one of the early refiners of oil. I'm referring now to The Unseen Hand, an excellent book, An Introduction to the Conspiratorial View of History, written by Ralph Emerson many years ago, a very famous book in our circles. But John D. Rockefeller, he writes here, was one of the early refiners of oil as he started in 1863 with two partners, and it continues here. What he wanted was to be the largest refiner in the world, the only refiner in the world. And continuing from that, we can also understand that we're dealing with the Rothschilds in all of this as well. They were very much opposed to the idea of having Lincoln to cross them and create a national bank, cutting them out of the system. They didn't like that at all, so the international bankers were involved in this. England and France were aligning themselves against the North on this side of the South. Fascinating stuff in that. In both England and France, Rothschild brothers had banks. The plot just not just thickens, but it just absolutely gets deep. Then there's, of course, the Knights of the Golden Circle, and Epperson makes a connection here between them and Jesse James. He says that it was Jesse's father, George James, the captain in the Southern Army, who fired the first shot at Fort Sumter. So, you know, all of this stuff, it's just amazing how deep this rabbit hole actually runs.
Yeah, and Beauregard came from a line of Jesuits in his family, General Beauregard. But anyway, we're going to jump into the 20th century now, and we've got World War One, and we've got the Spanish Civil War and World War Two, and a lot. We find warfare is modernizing, and the mayhem that especially is visited on what the people today call collateral damage on the civilian population because of the tremendous firepower of the weaponry, and also starting to use gas and stuff like that in the trench warfare. A lot of this stuff causes famine and disease, et cetera, to spread, and we find a lot of civilians dying in these wars.
Well,
so,
before we cross that threshold, there's another rather interesting fellow that you'd brought up on Wednesday. I just wanted to flesh out just a little bit further, and that was this John Hughes, the Archbishop of New York, and the draft riots. I found it rather interesting going back and studying him up quite a bit, which I did, but the idea of him basically being sponsored to go to Europe and drum up support, if you will, for the Northern cause. Not only was he able to get pledges for Germans and French and other European people, he was also able to make quite a bit of hay in Ireland and get a lot of people to come from Ireland, and then they gathered around him a bit up there in New York. And so his diplomatic mission that he took to France and Italy and Ireland and other places was also instrumental in bringing this all about. But I found it rather fascinating that when the draft riots and all the people were going nuts up there, it only took a word from Lincoln to get him to shut it all down. So obviously it wasn't a people's uprising. It was, again, being fomented by an archbishop.
And Lincoln certainly felt that way and expressed that to Charles Chinnicky in conversations that he had with him. Well, do you want to jump into World War One?
Let's go ahead.
Okay, because I think most of the listeners are familiar with when we start with history around the early 1900s. I'd say up to about several decades ago, some of the older World War II veterans actually knew World War One veterans. But anyway, World War One started in the Balkans. And Papal Rome's involvement in fomenting World War One, I think, is very clearly identifiable. And I'm going to start out with a short quotation by Edmund Paris, who was born Roman Catholic. He wrote a book called The Secret History of the Jesuits. And on page 9 of the 1975 edition I have, he says, "The public is practically unaware of the overwhelming responsibility carried by the Vatican and its Jesuits in the starting of two world wars, a situation which may be explained in part by the gigantic finances at the disposition of the Vatican and its Jesuits, giving them power in so many spheres, especially since the last conflict."
Well, how many people around the world do you think right now are Catholic?
Well, the Roman Catholic Church itself claims a billion adherents.
Now, many,
they're probably not too far off, but we have to also remember that many, and I know many, Roman Catholics are non-practicing Roman Catholics.
Well, if we were to take it and look at it demographically, what percentage of them would be in the Northern Hemisphere and what percentage of the Catholics would be in the Southern Hemisphere? Any idea?
Well, I don't know the percentages, but I would imagine that probably not that far off, because when you think all of South America is pretty much Roman Catholic.
Absolutely.
And Central America. And then when you look at Africa, there are spots in Africa that are fairly predominantly Roman Catholic, some region and provinces within some of the countries.
Absolutely.
In Africa.
Where I was going with that was, if we wanted to think about a moneymaker, yeah, you know, you can make fabulous wealth in oil. There's no doubt about it. You can make pretty good money with gold. You can make pretty good money in the mining industry. You can make pretty good money with timber and fishing. And you can make excellent money with raising crops and manufacturers. But you can also make money every time you circulate the plate around inside of a cathedral, if you will. You can make tremendous money when people give gifts in their wills to the church, etc. So if you just took a billion people, if they only got a dollar from every one of their adherents each week, you would be looking at a $52 billion a year industry that was not having to produce anything other than the word of God from the podium.
And that doesn't include all of the mass cards which I see at many funerals around my local area that's predominantly Roman Catholic, that are paid by all these various Roman Catholics for various Roman Catholic friends and relatives who have died.
It doesn't include all of the land holdings all around the world. It doesn't include all of the very important land holdings where inside of cities and major locations. It doesn't include all of the bequests that are large natural resource areas or any of that. So you look at these two major landowners, one of them being the Queen of England, another one being the Vatican potentially. You're talking, we're not talking small change here, folks. There's plenty of money to go around, and there's a reason to continue the hegemony.
Right. Well, in his book, The Secret History of the Jesuits, Edmund Parris goes on to point out that, contrary to Roman Catholic Church propaganda, Pope Pius X actually helped instigate the hostilities between Austria-Hungary, which was a Roman Catholic power, and Serbia, which was an Orthodox country. And both the Habsburg dynasty, again, those are the rulers of Austria-Hungary, and the papacy saw the growing power of Serbia, this Orthodox, little Orthodox country, as a threat in Eastern Europe. In fact, in late 1913, we have an Austrian prince named Schoenberg travels down and has an audience with Pope Pius X, who tells this Austrian prince, he says, quoting the Pope, Pius X, he says, "It would certainly have been better if Austria-Hungary had punished the Serbians for all the wrongs they had done." So in other words, we have this Roman Catholic Pope in late 1913 telling an Austrian prince that it's about time that Austria-Hungary would take care of it. It was actually past time to take care of that Serbian problem. And again, the vast majority of the Serbs are Orthodox Christians, and Orthodox Christians, as I mentioned earlier, have long been hated by Papal Rome. You mentioned the Knights of the Golden Circle. We're going to be getting more into a group called the Knights of Malta, so I just want to give a short definition for the listeners on the Knights of Malta, because we find these guys helping to finance communism, certainly financing the big rollers in Germany that put Hitler into power, and other fascists into power. So here's a little short definition of the Knights of Malta. The Jesuit-controlled Knights of Malta is a Roman Catholic religious military order that is headquartered in Rome with and is under the direct command of the Jesuit Superior General, in other words, the Black Pope. Much of the wealth of the Knights Templar order, when it was disbanded, or I should say suppressed, in 1312, was given to the Knights of Malta. And many Jesuit-controlled Knights of Malta have held top-level positions in various governments. And first one comes to my mind is old Franz von Papen in the Nazi government, in the world's foremost intelligence agencies, international banking, and publishing.
Okay, we'll pick it up with the Knights of Malta on the other side of the top of the hour break. Folks, we've been visiting with Daryl Eberhardt. His website is toughissues.org. We'll be right back.
Howdy. My name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, "Information is the currency of democracy. Trine Day brings you what some don't want you to read today." Dr. Mary's Monk is a book of profound importance that helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book, exposing the secret plans of the world's elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Got seawater? Clean water is essential, but millions of Americans go without clean water during hurricanes, droughts, and chemical spills.
Are you prepared to produce pure drinking water from poisoned water or seawater?
Do you want to remove toxins like fluoride from your tap water? Do you want to avoid buying bottled water?
Sea Panels are patent-pending solar-powered water distillers. They create clean water from any source, even ocean water or polluted groundwater. Water filters are terrific,
but to remove salt and chemicals, you'll need a desalination system.
Ours is simple and affordable and starts at less than $100. Just place in any sunny location and collect up to a gallon a day of delicious water per panel.
Nothing to clog.
No chemicals or filters to replace. And the more heat and sun you have, the more water you get.
Call 205-246-6492 or visit cpanel.com. Spelled S-E-A-panel.com. cpanel.com.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.
As globalism transitions from global to local, we become vocal local, blocking the globalist agenda right where we are, in our towns, cities, counties, and states. And now, here is that nemesis of globalism, your host, William Roberts.
And welcome back to our Wednesday, October the 7th, 2009, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local. Beginning our second hour of live broadcasting this morning, we come to you Monday through Friday here on the Oracle Broadcasting Network, oraclebroadcasting.com, visiting once again, as we do on Wednesdays, with Daryl Everhart, continuing our study of the missing gaps in history. Certainly, the Vatican plays a big role in history of the world, and if we fail to recognize that, then we've missed an important link. Back to you, Daryl. We're just starting the time of the of World War One, if you will, coming into the Bolsheviki and the Mensheviki and the establishment of the Federal Reserve Bank and et cetera here in the United States of America.
Right, and I'm not going to dwell too much on World War One, other than to say that World War One helped to set up World War Two. Clearly, the Versailles Treaty, and that certainly gave Hitler and the other Nazi party leaders all the ammunition they needed to get the Germans fired up to do another major conflict in Europe. But what we see happening near the end of World War One is that we get this Russian Revolution taking place, and it's actually in two phases, and that's something a lot of folks miss. And I'm going to give a good quote by Dr. Stanley Monteith that'll in a few minutes that'll help break that down. But basically, the Bolsheviks and Bolshevik, you mentioned Bolsheviks and Mensheviks.
Yes.
Actually, it's a dirty lie, because the Bolsheviks were not the larger group, but they took the name Bolsheviki, which means the majority guys in Russian. And the Mensheviki were the Mensheviks were the supposedly the minority, the other socialists.
Well, the minority, if my understanding is right, the Mensheviks was the Trotsky movement, and then the Bolshevik was the Lenin.
Lenin, and that, and they were the ones that claimed to be the true communists, the Bolsheviks, but they were never a majority. They just claimed that title. There were many other socialists and other groups that were involved in that revolution. But anyway, the Bolsheviks seized power in Russia in 1917, and they were funded by wealthy Knights of Malta in the West, and including the United States, and they were not funded by Jacob Schiff, and we'll get into that in a little bit with that Dr. Monteith quote. But two Jesuit-trained thugs would later, in this Soviet Union, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, in other words, Red Russia, Communist Russia, named Joseph Stalin, and a Roman Catholic cardinal named Gregory Agagianian. These were the two guys that oversaw the entire Soviet gulag system. And what the key thing to remember in this is that both Stalin was training for the priesthood, but Stalin and Agagianian had been trained by Jesuits, and they had been trained in a Byzantine Rite seminary in Tiflis. So the Jesuits had got themselves into positions in some of these Byzantine Rite seminaries in Russia and in Soviet Georgia. And millions of Russian Orthodox Christians then were, as a result of these two butchers, were murdered at the hands of this vicious totalitarian police state called the Soviet Union. And again, we have to remember that the papacy has long hated Orthodox Christians, and they went after a lot of Orthodox priests. And from everything I have read, the KGB then, after they had killed off all of the priests that they couldn't control, they put their people into power in the Orthodox Church.
Well, I think it was Paul I, wasn't it? Paul Petrovich, the Tsar of Russia in 1754, died in 1801. But he was basically almost denied his time in the sun, if you will. And he developed a very well-entrenched and successful spy network and put thousands of people to death. So there was a beginning in that history there, folks, and we'll pick it all up on the other side of this break. Stay with us.
Amazon.com has become a leader in online retail and is a place where people can find and discover virtually anything they want to buy. Amazon offers thousands of products, including
books, movies, and music,
full range of electronics,
computer and office,
sports and outdoors,
dry storable and organic foods,
health and wellness,
survival and tactical gear,
home and garden, and much more.
Amazon not only offers over 10,000 online products, but also operates retail websites and offers programs that enable you to sell your products online.
By making your purchases through Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com, a portion of each purchase goes to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Find great prices on hard-to-find items and help support Oracle Broadcasting at the same time. That website again is Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. No one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds of thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
The world appears to be on the brink of collapse. Experts say a pinch of heirloom vegetable seed could soon be the most valuable resource on Earth because it will provide healthy food now and every year after. SurvivalistSeeds.com now has the heirloom garden seed time capsule, allowing you to store your seeds for the future anywhere, even underground, for 100 years. The heirloom garden seed time capsule can withstand 3 tons of weight, is 100% rodent-proof, waterproof, and comes with a whopping 6,000 healthy vegetable seeds from 20 varieties that will grow anywhere in the USA. Unless you trust the government, the Heirloom Garden Seed Time Capsule and Heirloom Seeds from SurvivalistSeeds.com is your long-term food solution. Our competition charges 10 cents to $1.25 per seed for these same heirloom varieties. But you can now have a head of lettuce, a bundle of carrots, a basket of tomatoes, a giant watermelon, and 16 other varieties for about a penny a seed each. Be prepared. Buy your heirloom seeds today from SurvivalistSeeds.com and have food insurance for your family forever. Visit SurvivalistSeeds.com. SurvivalistSeeds.com is owned by Big John Lipscomb, host of the Don't Tread on Me radio show.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
Yes, we've returned once again right here on our Wednesday, October the 7th, 2009, two-hour broadcast of Become Vocal Local, now into the second hour of today's broadcast. Again, visiting with Daryl Everhart, his website, folks, if you'd like to visit it, www.toughissues.org, www.toughissues.org. Our call-in number is, and remains throughout the broadcast, 866-841-1065. If you'd like to call in, your calls are welcome. But again, it's important, I think, in my research at least, Daryl, to be certain not to come into a time period, let's say, like going into a prize fight and seeing it from the fifth round forward. There was lots of blows being thrown back and forth. The Poles invaded Moscow and the Ukraine early on in their history. This fellow, Paul, precedes the Tsar, Alexander II, we talked about. But here, back in the 1800s, 1754 was when he was born, 1801 was when he died. He was very much opposed to the Jacobin sentiments in the French Revolution, 1848 period. He was, he tried to suppress anything that was Jacobin, pamphlets which expressed or approached the Jacobin sentiments containing citizens and society and sovereignty. But it says here that he, suspicious beyond all of his royal predecessors, he developed a spy system more extensive, far-reaching, and effective than anything in the same line heretofore known among Christian nations. This was followed up by quick, certain, and relentless punishment of those found guilty of disloyalty or even suspected of it. Thousands of innocent victims were sacrificed to the inordinate fear of treachery which possessed the monarch. And then it goes on and continues. But the idea here is that there was an institution, if you will, or an instrument that was built at that time that very likely continued, perhaps in a diminished role, which was waiting to be dusted off, pumped up, and used again, and it seems like somebody did.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We find that let's take just for an example, the Russians under the Tsars had a pretty good secret police system. And the communists, when they stepped or took over, the Bolsheviks, I should say, the Russian communists took over, they inherited that state security institution, and they basically just tweaked it a little bit, and it became the Cheka, the NKVD, later the KGB. It's interesting how they keep changing the names, and it's now the FSB, and I think something like CVR or something. I forget the other.
Well, prior to the establishment by Ignatius Loyola and the Pope Paul, who was it, the third? Yeah, Pope Paul the Third, that actually recognized and approved the order of the Jesuits. Prior to the Jesuit order, can you remember any time, or you found any time in, we should say, maybe modern history, the Christian era, where we had such an order established? And then haven't we had a whole bunch of copycats since then?
Oh, for sure. But the Jesuits, throughout history, after they came along, set up a lot of different front groups. And I think we talked about that about 3 weeks ago when we talked about the Illuminati. The Illuminati, actually, Ignatius de Loyola came from the Alumbrado, which was in Spain. And so the Illuminati's been around a long time, and we just got the modern version of it was the one that Jesuit Adam Weishaupt set up that basically took the blame for the French Revolution. And but it's just an example of many, many times in history where the Jesuits, if they're being suppressed, if they want to carry out a revolution or something, will often set up a front group so that they have plausible deniability as to their involvement. And the front group, such as the Illuminati, so-called Illuminati, takes the blame, you know, for example, for the French Revolution.
Well, even the Catholic Encyclopedia uses that phraseology when you talk about Ingolstadt. When I went up over the weekend and was doing my homework on the university, Ingolstadt University.
Bavaria.
Yeah, yep. Bavaria. When the Jesuits were suppressed in 1773, the move was to move that university, largely because it was a Jesuit. I wanted to verify that because in my research I had never done it. Found a lot on it. But, they moved that university to another place, keeping its name, but in a new location. But that's just more history.
Yeah. And, I mentioned it, that Dr. Stanley Monteith has a very good quote, and I think it's from his book, if I'm looking here quickly. Yeah, it's from his book, Brotherhood of Darkness, that talks about this Bolshevik revolution. And again, all of us need to keep in mind that there were actually two revolutions, and his quote will clear that up. Here's the quote. Another point that is made, and I'm adding this, to convince us that the Jews or the Jewish bankers are our enemy is that Jacob Schiff provided $20 million to finance the Bolshevik Revolution. And, of course, Jacob Schiff is a Jew. Okay, did Jacob Schiff really help the Bolsheviks? Because of the progressive dumbing down of our people, most Americans don't realize that there were two Russian revolutions. The first revolution was in March 1917, or February if you use the old Russian calendar, and we need to keep in mind, I'm adding this, that was a coalition of various groups under Alexander Kerensky, and it included socialists of various types. The second, back to the quote, the second Russian revolution, or Bolshevik revolution, was in October of that same year. The March revolution, 1917, began in St. Petersburg when a contingent of military recruits refused to fire on anti-government demonstrators. The Tsar was forced to abdicate. Alexander Kerensky was chosen to lead Russia until elections could be held. When it became obvious that he intended to continue the war, in other words, Russia's involvement in World War I, the German High Command approached Lenin, who was living in Switzerland. They offered him money and transportation to go to Russia to overthrow Kerensky. And some people think there might have been some double dealing going on at that time. But anyway, Kerensky ends up getting dumped. During World War I, back to the quote, the American State Department was responsible for collecting intelligence information. Their files confirm the fact that Jacob Schiff opposed the Tsar, and after Kerensky had taken power, Jacob Schiff sent Kerensky a telegram congratulating him. But the Bolshevik Revolution didn't take place until 7 months later, when Montes is talking about author Anthony Sutton. When he examined the State Department's intelligence files, he found evidence that Jacob Schiff opposed the Bolsheviks. So here we have the Jewish banker opposing the Bolsheviks, back to the quote, and encouraged our State Department to oppose them. Of course, people in the State Department did actually, there were some helping the Bolsheviks all the time.
Absolutely.
Anyway, back to the quote here. The document, he's talking about the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, first appeared in Russia in 1905. It claimed that Zionists were behind the wars and revolutions of the 19th century and planned to seize control of the world. Many Russians believed the protocols, and they began to persecute the Jews and to destroy their property. When the Tsar refused to intervene, Jacob Schiff began plotting to depose him. Now, remember, this is the Tsar, but this is the first revolution coming up. He provided revolutionary literature to the Russian soldiers captured by the Japanese during the Russo-Japanese War in 1905. We'll get finished up when we get back.
Okay, very good. We'll be right back in 3 minutes, folks. Stay with us, visiting with Daryl Everhart, and your calls are welcome.
Heard about the most advanced affordable upgrade for your vehicle? Sonic spark plugs bring you increased fuel mileage and performance. It's like a new brain for your engine from enginebrain.com. Just like a pound of sawdust burns faster than a pound of wood chips, finer fuel mist burns faster. Using a patented process, Sonic spark plugs smash gasoline mist with ultrasound. Thousands of drivers have upgraded to Sonic spark plugs for more power and mileage. Just replace your old plugs with Sonic plugs. Now get a free Sonic spark plug for your chainsaw, generator, snowblower, or lawnmower, and pay only shipping and handling. Once you experience ultrasonic power, you'll want them in your car, truck, motorcycle, or RV. Visit enginebrain.com to learn why Sonic spark plugs outperform all other spark plugs. They're a small company, but their advanced plugs are 100% OEM compatible with your vehicle's warranty. Visit enginebrain.com to learn about combustion theory, hydrogen power, and fuel efficiency. Learn what the oil companies would rather you not know, like a new brain for your engine. EngineBrain.com. EngineBrain.com.
Look, it's time someone gave you the facts about your computer. If you're a Windows user, you know all too well what the problems are. Viruses, crashes, sluggish behavior. Finally, you have to fix it or take it to the shop. We see it every day. Now, Microsoft is preparing for the release of their new Windows 7. They want you to pay hundreds of dollars to upgrade. Well, you don't have to pay for the privilege of using your computer anymore. We've been installing Linux at home and for businesses in Austin for 4 years. Our customers love it. Why Linux? It never costs you a dime. All the software you need is free, and you never have to worry about Windows viruses again. Linux is all but immune. Any of your Windows programs will run on Linux as well. Have an older computer? Linux runs great on it, when Windows won't. So instead of paying for a system that's going to cause you problems, stop fighting your computer and start using it. Check out the facts at www.fixedbylinux.com. That's L-I-N-U-X, fixedbylinux.com. Or call us at 512-739-9707. There's a better way. Linux.
Of the 3 million plus edible food plants that grow on Earth, no other single plant can compare with the nutritional value of the powder, seeds, and oil of the hemp plant. At HempUSA.org, we ship worldwide these nutritional products with free shipping to the U.S. and Canada. At HempUSA.org, we want to educate our listeners that edible hemp is not marijuana and is certified THC-free. Our powder is 50% protein and does not contain gluten. Gluten impairs the cells from absorbing nutrients. This nutrient-dense food can be stored up to 5 years when vacuum-packed and is priced affordably to be used as a storable food. HempUSA.org is a bulk shipper starting with 5 pounds and up. To allow this food to work for you, call 908-691-2608 or go to HempUSA.org and order today. The body will react and heal itself given the proper nutrition. This superfood will be your greatest asset. So try it today, store it today, and change your life. Call 908-691-2608 or order from hempusa.org.
¶¶
And we've returned once again right here on Become Vocal Local. And in my research in the last couple of weeks, Daryl, one of the things that I came across I thought was rather interesting was that when the Rothschild, Mayor Amschel, the founder of this Rothschild banking industry, or cartel, you might look at it, when he had just married and moved in, they moved into a, he and his wife moved into a three-story building, a house, and one of the floors of the house was occupied by none other than the Schiffs. And so the Rothschilds and the Schiffs go back a long, long ways. And that rarely ever gets out into general circulation as well. But let's go ahead and finish up Monteith quote from his book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. I've given away a whole case of Dr. Stan's books and a whole case of his DVDs as well, even though he is a member of the Council of National Policy and is very soft on Israel. We all of us who own a copy of Carol Quigley's Tragedy and Hope are in debt to Dr. Monteith for his research and bringing that book back into general circulation. But let's pick it up right there.
We'll yeah, and when I do pick up that quote, before I do, I just want to let the listeners know that Monteith is making the case here that the people that really financed the Bolshevik Revolution was not Jacob Schiff. But he's trying to let the folks know is that, yeah, Jacob Schiff was opposed to the Tsar because the Tsar, the government, the Russian government under the Tsar before the revolution, was persecuting Jews. They called them pogroms and massacres of Jews. And even when the war started between the whites and the Bolsheviks or the Reds, the Russian Civil War, even when that started, both of those groups, the Red Army and the White Russian military forces, both of them were slaughtering Jews. And we also have to keep in mind that, there were some Jews on the Russian Politburo, but five out of six of them were murdered. So if the Jews were really running everything, that's a poor way, as Dr. Stan Monteith said, to treat the, if you have a Jew running the Bolshevik Revolution, then why are you killing all the Jews? But anyway, let's get back to this quote, because he's talking about Jacob Schiff, provided some revolutionary literature to the Russian soldiers captured by the Japanese during that Russo-Japanese War in 1905. And Monteith says it is even possible that some of the soldiers who participated in the Marching Means 1917 Revolution had read Jacob Schiff's literature. So he may have played a part in inciting the March 1917 Revolution. But that was not the Bolshevik Revolution, and I'm adding this, which occurred 7 months later. Now here, we're getting back to Anthony Sutton. And by the way, I think I've got about three or four of his books. Do you have any of his books?
No, I haven't. But I do have confidence that he's taken the time to do the necessary research and document his books very, very well.
Well, he's shown in his books how we financed not only the Bolshevik Revolution, but we financed the Nazis in World War II, and we certainly helped keep, I'm talking about English and American bankers, helped keep the Soviet Union afloat with loans, and many of those loans were not only interest-free loans, but they were also loans that were never collected. But anyway,
absolutely. I mean, if we don't get oil into this, then the discussion kind of gets a little bit confusing, folks, because the rapid growth of the oil industry. I'm reading again, referring to The Unseen Hand by Ralph Epperson. It says the rapid growth of the oil industry led Russia into the industrialized world. The traditional explanation of Russia's economy at this time was that the nation was an agrarian economy far behind the other European economies. However, during the period of 1907 to 1913, Russia's increase in its industrial production rate exceeded that of the United States, England, and Germany. Today, aren't we considering trading in rubles, moving away from the U.S. dollar hegemony? Yes, we are. The following is typical of the conclusion of many researchers who have examined this period. The Russian Revolution of 1917 came not at the end of a period of stagnation and decay, but rather after more than a half century of the most rapid and comprehensive economic progress. And with that progress came the development of a middle class, which you know is always the enemy of the conspiracy. And then he continues, and I'll close with this. He says, there are historians who now believe that the Russian Revolution of 1917 was in truth a revolution instigated by the American and European oil interests to wrest control of the Russian oil fields from the Rothschild-Nobel combination and land it in the hands of them. But this is also the time when the Northern Star and the Southern Star, two secret Masonic lodges, were starting to grow up in Russia, and so the plot just continues to thicken.
And we're going to finish with just one more sentence in this quote by Dr. Stan Monteith, and I want to let the listeners know that Professor Anthony Sutton, and it's A-N-T-O-N-Y, Professor Anthony Sutton ran afoul of the establishment, and he was blackballed by a number of them, here's what the final quote sentence in this quote by Dr. Stan Monteith. He says, when Professor Anthony Sutton researched the State Department intelligence files, he found documents showing that English and American financiers provided funding for the Bolsheviks, but that fact is never mentioned today. Could it be that the story of Jacob Schiff's $20 million gift to the Bolsheviks was contrived to divert attention away from the real source of their funding?
Well, I think that's very accurate, and I have a lot of respect for Patrick Wood and his writings as well. The research that comes there is reliable. Of course, we always have to understand, people, that there are other folk out there that have different leanings and different proclivities. I am not a fan of the illegitimate little box of rocks on the Mediterranean shore called Israel. I would look to that as being a geopolitical creation. It's 70% Ashkenazim. They have been absolutely unfair and cruel to the Sephardim and the Savra, the prickly pear in that region. I wouldn't support the continuance of Israel. But in that, that's my opinion. But everybody comes into this discussion with a bias. Let's just not let our biases color history.
Right. Now, if I could throw in a few cents on the Middle East, all I would say is that almost all of the leaders of Israel are like almost all of the leaders of Jordan and Iraq and other places. They're high-level Freemasons.
Exactly.
So they're being controlled, and if you think about it, Israel was formed to help foment World War III, basically, if you think about it, because that keeps everything stirred in the Middle East.
Well,
and that
conflict and crisis are absolutely imperative. I mean, when back in the 1700s, and the 1800s, and Karl Mordecai Marx and the positivists and the Fabian socialists, when they decided on this idea of the permanent revolution and crisis management, you know, you never want to let a good crisis go to waste. There couldn't be anything more divisive than to establish a Anglo-American base, if you will, in the Near East, and we did that through the establishment of Israel, and now you can see how this has played out, folks. I mean, we're in a position where we're in Iraq, we're in Afghanistan, we're threatening Iran. It's a perfect launch pad, and it's absolutely lamentable that our country was dragged in the midst of this, if not the fomenters.
Well, we may today be able to knock out the Spanish Civil War, which is a lead up to World War II. I'm going to make a football analogy here. If you think of the regular season for professional football, NFL, well, this was the exhibition season, the Spanish Civil War, because what they were testing weapons, but you also had the main actors in the following World War II were working behind the scenes. And we'll cover some of that. But this 1936 to 1939 Spanish Civil War is kind of important to know about, and I don't think it's really taught much. I didn't hear much about it in my high school when I went through. But let's first do a definition, and that's this column.
You're going to have to hold that. We'll come back.
Sure.
Pick up all of these dictatorships as they start to appear, folks. We'll be back in just a few moments.
You're listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network. Long live the revolution.
Millions of Americans are beginning to realize the enormity of the economic and political problems facing the U.S. and the world. And for the first time in their lives, they are feeling the need for preparedness. Ready Reserve Foods has been in continuous operation, manufacturing the finest in dehydrated foods for almost 40 years. Ready Reserve is the manufacturer. Unlike other companies that just broker canned foods, Ready Reserve controls the quality from start to finish with double enameled cans and nitrogen packaging. When purchasing from Ready Reserve Foods, you are buying factory direct at wholesale prices. Other companies are quoting delivery times of 1 to 2 months, while Ready Reserve ships within 5 business days. Many companies do not even offer a catalog. We will be more than happy to send a catalog to you free of charge. Dial 1-800-453-2202, 1-800-453-2202, or visit our website at readyreservefoods.com. Factory direct, wholesale pricing from Ready Reserve Foods. Call us at 1-800-453-2202.
Howdy, my name is Chris Milligan, publisher of Trine Day Books. Thomas Jefferson said, "Information is the currency of democracy." Trine Day brings you what some don't want you to read today. Dr. Mary's Monk is a book of profound importance that helps us understand what has really happened in our country. Born to write this story, author Ed Haslam had met Dr. Mary Sherman, whose grisly murder mystery led him first to secret medical labs and then into the wilderlands of the Kennedy assassination. Author Jim Mars calls it an eye-opening ride into government cover-ups. Daniel Estulin's award-winning international bestseller, The True Story of the Bilderberg Group, was hailed by editors at a major New York publisher, but then stopped by higher-ups. After you read this book exposing the secret plans of the world's elite, you'll understand why. Trine Day Books are available at bookstores everywhere or by calling 1-800-556-2012.
Got seawater? Clean water is essential, but millions of Americans go without clean water during hurricanes, droughts, and chemical spills.
Are you prepared to produce pure drinking water from poisoned water or seawater?
Do you want to remove toxins like fluoride from your tap water? Do you want to avoid buying bottled water?
Sea Panels are patent-pending solar-powered water distillers. They create clean water from any source, even ocean water or polluted groundwater. Water filters are terrific,
but to remove salt and chemicals, you'll need a desalination system.
Ours is simple and affordable and starts at less than $100. Just place in any sunny location and collect up to 1 gallon a day of delicious water per panel.
Nothing to clog.
No chemicals or filters to replace. And the more heat and sun you have, the more water you get.
Call 205-246-6492 or visit cpanel.com. Spelled S-E-A panel.com. cpanel.com.
This is Become Vocal Local with your host, William Roberts.
And we've returned once again, moving into the Spanish Civil War. There's an author, Daryl, that's in my mind. He's a very prominent socialist that traveled there, was involved in that. I don't remember whether it was George Orwell or Bernard Shaw. Who was it? Can you think of the name of the author?
Orwell sounds like it might be the guy, but I'm not going to. Go
yeah,
on record.
I won't hang my head on that, folks, but I will say that this was the guy that went over there in support of what we're about to discuss, saw the effect of the totalitarian, if you will, the dictatorship, didn't like that idea, and I believe it was Orwell or one of the other early Fabian socialists, and they decided on the gradualism as being a better system. But let's pick it up there. This is very important. And you're right, it is. It does fly right under the radar most of the time in the histories.
Okay, and since we're going to be talking about fifth columns, that term actually was born, I guess. Someone may have come up with it before, but the first real example of this term being used was in this Spanish Civil War. So I'm going to give Webster's New World Dictionary, Second College Edition, 1974, give their definition of fifth column. That's quoting them, first used by the Spanish nationalist General Mola, 1936, who besieging Madrid, and I think all our listeners know that's the capital of Spain, with four columns from the outside, boasted of having a fifth column within. I'll get back to their definition here. Of course, that's what that means, folks, and I think probably all the listeners know that, is that if you're fighting somebody, you've got some hidden some of your own hidden forces behind his lines that are helping you. So anyway, back to the definition. Number one, those people in Madrid who aided the forces of Francisco Franco in his uprising against the Spanish Republic, and they have 1936-1939. Number two, any group of people who give aid and support to the enemy from within their own country. So we need to keep that in mind as we go through this. I believe, again, relatively few Americans know very much about the Spanish Civil War, again, 1936-1939. So let's take just a quick look at what occurred here. Number one, the Spanish monarchy fell out of favor with the Spanish people in the first several decades of the 20th century, partly due to Spanish military casualties. They were sustaining some fairly high casualties in their fighting down there in Spanish Morocco. Number two item, the Republic was proclaimed in 1931. The Spanish Republican government, after discovering, and this was not known by a lot of folks, buried bodies of babies in a number of Roman Catholic convents, made plans to launch a major investigation of the Roman Catholic Church, which was super powerful in Spain at that time. Many Spaniards, including a lot of Spanish Roman Catholics, were outraged at the Roman Catholic Church because of these revelations about the little baby bodies found in the tunnels between convents and monasteries. Some confiscation of Roman Catholic Church property had already begun, and the Republican government wisely separated church and state. Remember, that always gets the papacy and its Jesuits after you. And Roman Catholicism, they stated, would no longer be the official state religion. So this really got this Republican government in Spain on the radar screen of the papacy.
Well, how many years consistently did the Catholic Church rule and reign in Spain?
Oh, yes. I mean, that was one of their real strongholds, Spain and Portugal, in the settling of South and Central America.
Absolutely. Well, of course, I mean, we're talking, this is a major shift. This is the when Spain sided with the Vatican, if you will, throughout all of the Inquisition, the Counter-Reformation, and the whole program. You know, where was Ignatius Loyola from? So, yeah, this is a really important juncture, and it would be not just a bold but almost a suicidal move.
Right, and of course, the Republican government even went a step further. Not only did they confiscate Roman Catholic Church property, but they stated that no longer would Roman Catholicism be the state religion, and this put the final nail in their coffin. They established secular education. Before that, the Vatican had total control of the education system in Spain. So the Vatican was furious, and they quickly made plans to overthrow this legally elected Spanish government. Now, we've got large landowners, the Spanish Roman Catholic Church hierarchy, and some military leaders, and these are the groups that all loved the old Spanish feudal system. They're all uniting in order to work for the overthrow of this legally elected Republican government. And the Roman Catholic clergy then organized a Catholic Action Party, similar to the Ustashi Catholic Action in Croatia, in order to carry out civil disobedience on behalf of the Roman Catholic Church's, in other words, the Vatican's, policies and objectives. So we, in 1936 rolls around, we get elections, and the Popular Front, in other words, that's the Republican forces, also called the Loyalists, they win a clear majority. The response of the anti-Republican forces, again urged on by the Roman Catholic Church, was to launch a vicious civil war, again 1936 to 1939. So we find out the Vatican, Nazi Germany, and Fascist Italy, they're all getting together now and supporting the anti-Republican forces, which are headed by Roman Catholic Fascist Francisco Franco. The Loyalists, again Republicans, these are the guys that love their constitutional republic, they're able to hold on to part of the country through 3 hard years of fighting. And I'd like to let the listeners know, by the way, that the United States and Britain refused to help the forces of the democratically elected Spanish government. Finally, this anti-Republican forces, with the help from the Vatican, Nazi Germany, and Fascist Italy, and using thousands of Muslim troops, defeated the Republican forces. Now, the Republicans, I have to say this, did get some help from the Russians, from the Soviets, but it was minuscule compared to what Fascist Italy and Nazi Germany, especially Nazi Germany, provided military advisors and equipment and aircraft. and even had their own pilots flying in that. So really, Nazi Germany and Fascist Italy and the Vatican, the three of them teamed up and brought in Muslim troops to help to crush actually these Roman Catholics and Protestants that wanted to have a popular representative government in their country.
Well, Spain really has the holds the stranglehold. It holds the throat, if you will, on access to the Mediterranean. Anybody that's running or controlling Spain really is in an excellent and an ideal position to regulate all traffic in and out of the Mediterranean. So that's extremely important. It's also a huge landmass. That's important. And to this day, it is still, I just checked in my atlas, it is still listed as a Catholic country.
So anyway, basically I call this Vatican payback to the freedom-loving Spanish people who were predominantly and still are to this day Roman Catholic for daring to challenge the Vatican's or the papacy's authority, and it manifested itself thusly. Number one, a totalitarian fascist dictatorship gets set up then right after the Republican forces are defeated under the leadership of the Roman Catholic dictator, Generalissimo Francisco Franco, who's nothing but a puppet of the Vatican.
And how long did he remain in power, and how long has it been a dictatorship since?
Well, he was in for quite a while. I don't have the exact year here, but Franco immediately turned back the what we would call the clock of the Republican reforms, and the Roman Catholic Church again gained reigned supreme in Spain, and they became the state religion again, as they were allowed to get back into the education system, and the bottom line is freedom died. And I would ask the listeners to think, isn't it quite interesting that the Vatican supported both the forces of fascism and the use of Muslim forces against a country whose population was predominantly Roman Catholic?
Absolutely. And then there's the Javier Solano, many people think of him with great regard. Then there's also the Centra, Juan Carlos's Spain, involved in the Trans-Texas Corridor and the North American Corridor and the development of the North American Security and Prosperity Partnership Agreement, and on and on and on.
And again, this was used as a testing ground here in the Spanish Civil War for both the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany to test out weapon systems and to basically gear up for World War II.
Well, let's look at that just briefly because of your military background, and talk a little bit for some of the younger people in the audience or those who haven't studied it. What a dramatic shift happened between the way that the troops were fielded and armed in World War I versus the way that World War II developed.
Right, because World War I, basically, after the initial battles were fought, the first couple battles, settled down into what folks call trench warfare. And for most of the World War I, those lines did not change much. I mean, basically, you would charge forward, let's say the British and the French forces, and maybe you might capture 200, 300 yards. Maybe 2 weeks later, the Germans counterattack and take back the 200 to 300 yards. And basically, the forces on both sides settle in, and you get gas warfare and all other kinds of other stuff that they hadn't seen.
Play that out right on the other side of this break, folks. We're visiting with Errol Everhart. Your calls are welcome at 866-841-1065.
Amazon.com has become a leader in online retail and is a place where people can find and discover virtually anything they want to buy. Amazon offers thousands of products, including
books, movies, and music,
full range of electronics,
computer and office,
sports and outdoors,
dry storable and organic foods,
health and wellness,
survival and tactical gear,
home and garden, and much more.
Amazon not only offers over 10,000 online products, but also operates retail websites and offers programs that enable you to sell your products online.
By making your purchases through Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com, a portion of each purchase goes to the Oracle Broadcasting Network.
Find great prices on hard-to-find items and help support Oracle Broadcasting at the same time. That website again is Amazon.OracleBroadcasting.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. No one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds of thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
The world appears to be on the brink of collapse. Experts say a pinch of heirloom vegetable seed could soon be the most valuable resource on Earth because it will provide healthy food now and every year after. SurvivalistSeeds.com now has the heirloom garden seed time capsule, allowing you to store your seeds for the future anywhere, even underground, for 100 years. The heirloom garden seed time capsule can withstand 3 tons of weight, is 100% rodent-proof, waterproof, and comes with a whopping 6,000 healthy vegetable seeds from 20 varieties that will grow anywhere in the USA. Unless you trust the government, the heirloom garden seed time capsule and heirloom seeds from SurvivalistSeeds.com is your long-term food solution. Our competition charges 10 cents to $1.25 per seed for these same heirloom varieties. But you can now have a head of lettuce, a bundle of carrots, a basket of tomatoes, a giant watermelon, and 16 other varieties for about a penny a seed each. Be prepared. Buy your heirloom seeds today from SurvivalistSeeds.com and have food insurance for your family forever. Visit SurvivalistSeeds.com. SurvivalistSeeds.com is owned by Big John Lipscomb, host of the Don't Tread on Me radio show.
And we've returned, and at this particular time period in history, Daryl, I'm so glad you brought us into this. You know, Missouri's famous for its mules, the Missouri Mule, and there were lots and lots and lots of people getting wealthy selling Missouri mules into World War One. Folks, there was a huge shift here. This is the birth, if you will, of what becomes the military-industrial complex. This is the beginning of modern warfare. We're going from, as Daryl said, you know, trench warfare to the idea that even the early aircraft, the biplanes and things like that with cloth skins on them, you would take a bomb and you would fly over a trench and you would pick a bomb up out from between your legs someplace and you would drop it over the side of your airplane, you know, that kind of stuff. But the shift then, all of a sudden, now we've got Henry Ford, we've got General Motors coming on, we've got motor tanks, we've got motorized carriers and things like that. All of this stuff just starts to mushroom. And so this was definitely a proving ground and a breeding ground for what would become probably the bloodiest century in the history of mankind.
Yes, for many centuries, up to the Spanish Civil War, battles were fought primarily by infantry and cavalry with some artillery support. Artillery didn't really pick up big time until the American Civil War, at least in our part of the world, and it had started to pick up in Europe. But artillery would later become, but you brought in, would become much more sophisticated, become mobile, where they would put it on APCs and tracked vehicles, and that I should say. But the aircraft really changed everything because strategically you could fly way behind the enemy's lines, and when you start having propeller-driven aircraft rather than the old World War One types, like you mentioned, the guy had pulled the bomb out between his legs, well, all of a sudden you have machine guns on these fighters, and they're able to carry a fairly large bomb underneath and drop it, like the Stukas, the dive bombers. And then you had the World War II bombers that were built, the large ones, B-17s and that could travel fairly long distances and really hit the enemy way behind his front lines. That changed things, but the other thing that changed was the horse cavalry became the tanks and the armored personnel carriers and the trucks.
Well, when the Germans drove all the way to Moscow, in the first war, basically, and then were turned and driven out. This was because of the way that they were moving. It was horse drawing the cannon and bringing along the supplies and things like that, mules and whatnot. And all of that shifted in that time period. And I think you had it right. World War One is, I like to think of it as World War One or the Worldwide War Part A and Part B or Worldwide War 2.0. You know, it really was a continuation. The bar that was set at the Versailles Treaty made it absolutely impossible for the German people to do anything but eventually come back into the theater again. And my father was a military command pilot. Trained many, many, many people how to fly the B-17, the Martin Marauder, the B-26. So he started in as in the Army Air Corps, but then here in the United States, we then developed the United States Air Force, which became the superpower, as opposed to, as you said before, either the Army or the Navy. So much was happening here, and again, the beginning of the military-industrial complex, which brought a lot of the financiers and a lot of business people, industrialists, the captains of finance and industry, into the foreground where the Vatican really was having to play catch-up to try and keep up with these guys. But keep up they have.
And right, and the German army was the first to really develop what they called the Blitzkrieg-type warfare, where you would have armored forces, and of course with their support, the trucks and everything following behind. But moving anti-tank divisions quickly, fairly quickly and fairly decent distances that, you know, before infantry could never cover, that where they were able to, what they would call mobile warfare, rather than moving divisions of, as they say, foot soldiers slogging through swamps and over mountains and hills. All of a sudden, you have a fairly decent road system in Europe. And these tanks, rather than attacking the Siegfried Line, they're doing an end run. You know, they're moving hundreds of miles in several days and coming around and hitting you from behind.
Well, I don't remember exactly the name of them. They may have been Panzers, but perhaps not.
Yeah.
But the first German tanks were kind of, you know, just to use a kind of an analogy, like a Model T with a heavy skin on them, you know. They were a very rapid little, almost like a cat tractor. They just scooted right along, moved quickly, but they were very small. They were a light tank, and so much different from the ones we have today. But they did. They would move whole lines of them and just move rapidly and deploy, and with the guns and the machine guns and all of that, a tremendous change in warfare.
Right, and I don't want the listeners to think the tanks were invented in World War II, but they had actually introduced a few in World War I, but they were very heavy, they were very clumsy, and they didn't do that well.
Got stuck a lot.
Yes, they did. And again, the trench warfare, we saw the introduction of gas warfare, and that followed up in World War II, not quite to the extent that we saw it in World War I. But again, you had the capability then, and of course the Soviets developed it later on in the war with their tanks, that you're able to move several tank divisions quickly and maybe to the north and to the south of your enemy, come in and encircle large bodies of troops.
Well,
go ahead.
The huge resources, the natural resources that they had, and because they had already, as we said, we're not talking about this agrarian thing. That's kind of the historical smokescreen. They were rapidly industrializing and growing, and they had the almost unlimited access to petroleum products now that they had gotten into the business. But the tanks that the Russians were developing were considerably heavier and better, I think, built than the ones that the Germans were deploying from such a long distance away.
And I'm trying to think it back. I think it was the T-34. Does that sound right? But anyway,
it's close. I didn't.
The heavy duty tank that the Russians developed gave the Germans some trouble for a while because the German guns were not quite as large. As the main guns on the cannons on the tanks were not as large as and they were not able to really penetrate the armor on those, I believe it was the T-34 tanks, but it was the first heavy-duty tank that the Russians developed. And those tanks gave the Germans a lot of trouble, and of course you had that major tank battle at Kursk. And, But we'll be covering a lot of this stuff when, God willing, next Wednesday, when we can really get into World War II. But
absolutely, and we've only got a couple of moments left in today's broadcast, and before we completely run out of time, I'm such a motor mouth, I want to thank you now, once again, Daryl, for getting up early and coming on the air with us here on our Wednesday morning broadcast and bringing your research to us. And I'll say this about warfare, folks. When Mons Meg was invented back quite a long, long time ago, it was one of the biggest, the baddest boys on the block. It was a huge cannon. It took wheelbarrows of shot and wheelbarrows of powder. And that brought an end to the idea of castles and moats and things like that. It was the end of what you could consider the feudal period. No longer were you safe inside your castle and pouring hot oil on people and working with archers and crossbows from above. And the very same things happened right at this time period, Daryl, where we went to the very heavy guns, the long-range rifles, the howitzers and things like that, but also the aircraft and the beginning of destroyers and carriers and things like that. It just completely transformed the world. We've wasted so much of our natural resources and our petroleum reserves and things like that on this continuation of financing both sides of the war. I think right now, geopolitically, the world is sick and tired of the United States of America and England and others in Europe agitating and fomenting wars. I don't know how the future is going to play out, but certainly in the marketplace today, fewer and fewer people are willing to carry our debt and finance these wars. And that might be a good thing. We might be moving into a better century, but it's certainly not going to be a better century, folks, unless we all become vocal local, become active right where we are, teach this information to other people, download these broadcasts to CD or disc. You're not going to find this particular discussion out there. How hard has it been, Daryl, for you to get this information out to the people?
Oh, I think I've told you before that there's a fair amount of people, and I won't name any names in the alternative media, that told me, hey, Daryl, we believe everything you're saying is true, and you've got the documentation, but we can't talk about it because if we do, we'll offend Roman Catholics.
And isn't that a shame, folks, because we really need to understand how long this dupe has been running and what fools some of us, and I include myself in that, have been played by the organized religions. It's time for us to wake up, folks. Wake up and smell the coffee. Thank you, Daryl. Thank you, audience, for listening. We'll be back again tomorrow with Vicki Davis. Until then, good day.
Taking it back, one precinct, one county, one state at a time. You've been listening to Become Vocal Local.
Have you heard about the most advanced affordable upgrade for your vehicle? Sonic spark plugs bring you increased fuel mileage and performance. It's like a new brain for your engine from enginebrain.com. Just like a pound of sawdust burns faster than a pound of wood chips, finer fuel mist burns faster. Using a patented process, Sonic spark plugs smash gasoline mist with ultrasound. Thousands of drivers have upgraded to Sonic spark plugs for more power and mileage. Just replace your old plugs with Sonic plugs. Now get a free Sonic spark plug for your chainsaw, generator, snowblower, or lawnmower and pay only shipping and handling. Once you experience ultrasonic power, you'll want them in your car, truck, motorcycle, or RV. Visit enginebrain.com to learn why Sonic spark plugs outperform all other spark plugs. They're a small company, but their advanced plugs are 100% OEM compatible with your vehicle's warranty. Visit enginebrain.com to learn about combustion theory, hydrogen power, and fuel efficiency. Learn what the oil companies would rather you not know, like a new brain for your engine. Enginebrain.com. Enginebrain.com.
Look, it's time someone gave you the facts about your computer. If you're a Windows user, you know all too well what the problems are. Viruses, crashes, sluggish behavior. Finally, you have to fix it or take it to the shop. We see it every day. Now, Microsoft is preparing for the release of their new Windows 7. They want you to pay hundreds of dollars to upgrade. Well, you don't have to pay for the privilege of using your computer anymore. We've been installing Linux at home and for businesses in Austin for 4 years. Our customers love it. Why Linux? It never costs you a dime. All the software you need is free, and you never have to worry about Windows viruses again. Linux is all but immune, and many of your Windows programs will run on Linux as well. Have an older computer? Linux runs great on it, when Windows won't. So instead of paying for a system that's going to cause you problems, stop fighting your computer and start using it. Check out the facts at www.fixedbylinux.com. That's L-I-N-U-X, fixedbylinux.com. Or call us at 512-739-9707. There's a better way. Linux.
You are now listening to the Oracle Broadcasting Network, the home of cutting-edge talk radio.